I'm speaking today with Cody Pogue, who is the Democratic candidate for State House in District 127 up in the Kingwood area. Cody, first question I'd like to ask, why are you running for this office?
Well, there's a long story behind that one. I've got a degree in history, and it's always been my passion. And when I'm studying history, sort of my area that I like to study is the Founding Fathers era with James Madison and Thomas Jefferson and those guys. And they talk a lot about civic duty and civic virtue and all that sort of thing. And when I was in college, I read all that stuff and it really changed my life and got me thinking that a life of service really is worth it. So I decided to become a teacher and taught for a low-income school in Houston ISD for a while. And then I worked for the U.S. government for the National Archives and Records Administration. And I've been a college professor teaching history and government the last few years. And, you know, in 2011, when they voted to cut education by $5.4 billion, I felt that that was devastating. You know, whatever reason, you should always put our kids first. You should always put the future first. And I went and I did some protest and all of that sort of thing, and they still didn't listen to us, including my representative, Dan Huberty. So when the last fall came around, I was hoping somebody would run against him, and the people that I thought might do it weren't doing it. So, you know, I always tell my kids, they got to do their civic duty. So I decided to go ahead and do mine. So I got my name on the ballot, and I decided I was going to put everything I've got into it and go ahead and win that district and, you know, fight for our future, for our kids and for everything else.
So, I mean, as a teacher, I mean, are you teaching in school districts now?
Or? I'm in the community college now.
Okay, well, we'll talk about that in a minute.
Okay.
I mean, I assume you still have a lot of friends and colleagues.
Of course.
What are you hearing from them about the effect of those budget cuts? Oh. How has that affected their ability to do their job in the classroom?
Well, I mean, it starts with my friends who are just graduating from college and who are still looking for jobs in some cases. You know, they were unfortunate enough to go through 4 years of college studying to be a teacher, and they graduated right at the time when people were being laid off and nobody was hiring. You know, I got one guy, he's been looking for 2 years, and he's a substitute teacher still. And so I see a lot of that. But, you know, a lot of them, they talk about class sizes, larger classes than they should be. And, I mean, people don't think about that. I was a substitute teacher for a while, and I was in, like, a third grade math class one day. And I saw the effect of me against just, you know, 18 kids in there. And it was hard to teach. But I can't imagine 25, 26 kids in a classroom. It's just, you know, it makes it really tough. And you imagine if, like, a third grade math class, if they miss out on those math skills, well, then they're going to be behind in fourth grade math and fifth grade math, and they may never catch up. So it's really important that we, you know, fix that.
Community colleges were also hit pretty hard in the last budget. What has the effect of that been from your perspective?
Well, I think, you know, the things that I've seen, luckily the school that I work at, they, you know, saved their money.
You're at Lone Star College?
I'm at San Jac now.
San Jac,
I was
okay.
At Lone Star. But, yeah, well, they hire a bunch of adjuncts, very few full-time professors, and they do things, you know, we have our syllabus online now. We don't hand out syllabus on the first day. There was talk about trying to put exams online. They decided not to do that, even though it would save money. You got to deal with plagiarism and you know, cheating and all that stuff. So we decided to still have exams in the classroom. But anywhere we can cut, library, you know, not buying so many books, anything like that, they're doing. And, of course, tuition's going up, too, which is unfortunate.
Well, I mean, obviously, you know, we've seen the effects. We're aware of the problem, you know. It comes down ultimately to revenue.
Mm-hmm.
What does Texas need to do? What does the legislature need to do to restore the revenue?
Right.
Where is it going to find this?
Right. Well, first of all, that needs to be a priority, you know, and I feel like a lot of people in there, that's not their priority. Their priority is cutting taxes on the rich, and that's their top priority. So education comes either second or even further down. So we need to make it a priority, but then we need to start looking at options. One is, you know, we need to close the tax loopholes. There's billions of dollars that go to the loopholes where people can, you know, write offs and all of that sort of thing. And there are certain places that it should go. You know, I believe that we should have agricultural exemptions for small farmers and different things like that. But a lot of the exemptions people can get, they're not necessary. And, you know, we need to close those loopholes, and we can save billions of dollars from that. I'm also a big supporter of ending our addiction to teaching to the test. We spend millions and millions of dollars on just getting a hold of the test every year, just having them written, not to mention the man hours that we spend when we could be actually teaching. Instead, our school teachers are giving several tests every year, or they're teaching to the test. We need to fix that. And also, I would be open to go ahead and legalizing casino gambling in the state of Texas. You know, it's not a perfect solution. It has its issues. But, you know, I believe people should be free to do what they want with their money. And, hey, they're going to Louisiana and Oklahoma and New Mexico anyway, so why not go ahead and keep that money here and use it to educate our kids?
Well, let's talk about standardized testing. I mean, when people talk about teaching the test, what does that mean? And in what way would you reform the accountability system in Texas?
Right. You know, we got to hold our teachers accountable. And, you know, for now, I would say just let the schools all hold their teachers accountable. And we can develop something else in the future. But right now, I think we're at the point where what we're doing is clearly not working. So we should stop what we're doing and, you know, go to something else, whatever that might be. I saw one instance, you know, it really bothered me a lot. It was at a school, and basically what the principal was telling the teachers to do is they made a list of all the students that are in their classes. And there was three lists, and one of them was the high achievers, another was the low achievers, and another was what they called the bubble students. And basically what it said was, these are the high achievers, these are the people who are going to pass the tax test. No matter what, these kids are going to pass. These are the kids who are probably going to fail the tax test looking at their previous scores. But then you got these bubble students, they said. And these are the students where if you work with them enough, they'll pass. But if you don't, they'll fail. So the idea was, if you have to call on a student, these are the ones you call on. If you want to work with the student, these are the ones you work with. And the whole purpose, it wasn't teaching to every kid. It was maximizing the number of people who pass. That way they could get those five or six extra kids. That way they can maximize their scores and be recognized or whatever they're looking for. And I think that's just the downfall of the school system. So whatever we go to, we've got to get away from that.
Okay. Let's talk about health care for a minute. As you know, the Supreme Court ruled the Affordable Care Act was constitutional, but they gave the states the option to not expand Medicaid, which is what Governor Perry has said he would like, plan, the way he presented. What do you think will be the effect of that?
Oh, I mean, I think the effect will, you know, be devastating on people who rely on those services. And he should accept the money. You know, it's we're paying our money to the federal government, and the federal government wants to give some of that back to us. Why should we not accept it? You know, Perry always talks about states' rights and that sort of thing. Well, we should accept the money. You know, one out of four people in Texas can't get health care right now. And we're at the bottom on that. And Perry can brag all he wants about how we have a great unemployment rate. But when you look at it, our health care rate is horrible. We rank really high when it comes to low-wage jobs, to minimum-wage jobs. And that's something we need to work on fixing. We need to go forward, not go backwards.
And in the last session especially, there were a lot of restrictions placed on family planning and reproductive health care.
Right.
What do you see? You know, what's your take on all that?
Right. Well, you know, here's my deal. People always ask me, am I pro-life or pro-choice? And I don't really like calling myself either one of those categories, because here's what the deal is. I would love to live in a world where there are no abortions. But the way to go after abortion isn't by making a law and saying people can't do it. What we've got to do is make it to where people don't have the need for it. And we do that by making it to where there's very few unplanned pregnancies. And the way to make where there's no unplanned pregnancies is through family planning. You know, if people have adequate access to contraception, if we're teaching safe sex, age-appropriate sexual education in our classrooms, if we're making sure that our WIC programs are in order and that we're giving people hope that they can raise their kids, if we're doing all those things, then we're not going to see nearly as many unplanned pregnancies, and the abortion rate will go down tremendously. And I think that should be our focus. You know, right now, the Republican solution solution is to wait until somebody really wants an abortion, and then we're going to try to shame them. I don't think that's a solution. Let's go at the root of the problem, and let's really fix it, because what they're doing is just trying to hide their head in the sand, and it's not going to work. It's going to lead, if they cut family planning, we're going to have more abortions probably, and on top of that, we're going to have a bunch of people who aren't ready to raise kids, having kids, and they're not going to have the resources to do it. Governor Perry isn't going to want to put more money into the WIC programs and all of that sort of thing, so I think we should keep those things.
One issue that was a hot topic in 2011 that didn't get passed but looks like it's going to be on the agenda again in 2013 is sanctuary cities. Mm-hmm. What's your opinion on that?
Well, you know, immigration is a it's a hot button issue, but there's two facts. There's one, there's the pragmatic deal where we don't have the law enforcement in the state of Texas or even in the United States to go and hunt down 20 million people or whatever the number is and deport them and make sure that they don't come back. It's just unreasonable. We don't have what it takes to do that. And then secondly, you know, I grew up, I'm 29 right now, and I grew up around a lot of people who they were Hispanic and they were my friends. You know, I didn't think of them as being illegal or not illegal. They were the people I went to school every day. They were the people I talked to. They were my close friends. And surprisingly to me, a lot of those people did turn out to be undocumented. And they've been in this country since they were 2-3 years old, sometimes even younger than that. And they didn't ask to come over here. They didn't ask to break the law. But now they're dealing with a situation where I was able to get a driver's license, get a job, go to college, make something of myself. And they're still hiding at home. They can't get a driver's license. They can't go out and get a legitimate job. They can't go to college. They can't do any of these things. They're just surviving and hoping that one day the DREAM Act will pass. And I don't think it's right for many reasons. One, there's just the moral aspect of it. But also, think about how these people could benefit our economy if we go out and allow them to be productive, tax-paying members of society. I'm a big supporter of the DREAM Act. We don't need any Arizona-style anything like that in Texas. Let's pass the DREAM Act. Let's let these young people go to college. And, you know, immigration is an issue. We do need to close down our borders for illegal immigrants and so forth. But the people who have been here for a while, let's go ahead and let them stay. Let them be productive members of society.
Another issue that's coming up, getting back to education, is vouchers, which is mm-hmm. a means of providing financial support for people who want to put their kids in private schools. Right. It's more complicated than that, and frankly, for all of the buzz about it, it's not really clear if any of the people now pushing it have a clearly defined agenda of what that means. But what does it mean to you as someone who's taught in the public schools, and what do you think about it?
Right. Well, I have a lot to say on that. First of all, you know, I'm a Christian, and I've been a Christian for a long time, and I'm really passionate in my beliefs. But, you know, when you look at the foundation of this country, our country is founded on religious freedom. You know, the First Amendment says Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. And that basically means that no government money should go to supporting any religion. And one of the things I've found kind of interesting is a lot of Christians, they're really into the vouchers until they find out that other religions would be able to start private schools of their own religion. Then they're like, no, we're supposed to have Christian schools. You know, let's just leave religion out of the tax dollars. Use our tax money to support educational programs that are non-religious, that are teaching math and history and science and the basic stuff. And that's what we should be doing. And secondly, I did teach for a charter school for a little while. And, you know, the difference between a charter school and a public school, first of all, just in the integrity of the school and the oversight is just totally different. But also in the value that's put on education is totally different as well. For-profit schools, their main purpose isn't educating children. Their main purpose is getting money. And when the public school hires people at $45,000, the charter school will hire people at $28,000. And so will the private school. And they will hire unqualified teachers to teach the kids. And basically what I see doing is, unless they're a magnet school that's drawing in the best and the brightest kids, then they're not giving the kids the education that they deserve. So we need to keep all of our kids in the public schools. You know, if somebody wants to pay to put their kid in private school, if somebody chooses to homeschool their own kid, that's fine. But as far as government money, we need to keep our government money in our public schools.
As we speak, this week, the federal courts ruled that the congressional legislative and Senate maps that the legislature drew last year were illegal, that they had discriminatory effect and purpose.
Right.
It is very likely, it seems to me, that the legislature will get involved in redistricting again next year. What would you like to see done with your own district and sort of in general?
Well, I just think our districts should be made fair. You know, I'm not a fan of gerrymandering, you know. And I mean, Republicans do it today. Democrats did it back before we took power, or back before the Republicans took over in the 80s and the 90s. And from both sides, you know, we need to make fair maps that don't discriminate based on race. I mean, they shouldn't even be drawn based on party. Let's just draw fair districts where, you know, where, yeah, you may have a guy who's in office, who's an incumbent, who's going to have a real challenge. He may not have a district that's 70% for him. But, hey, that's what democracy is about. That's what our country's founded on. You know, let the people vote on the best candidate and let both people have an equal shot. Let's not draw districts where the guy that's in there, Republican or Democrat, it goes unchallenged.
You are, of course, running in a district that was drawn to elect a Republican. I mean, that's got to be a challenge.
Right.
How do you convince people who are not inclined to vote for Democrats to vote for you?
Right. Well, you know, of course, that's something that I've heard a lot is, you know, why are you running? Don't you realize that you can't win? But, you know, yeah, Dan Uberty, he's got the district drawn from him. He's got up for him. He's got a whole lot more money than I do. But, man, me and my volunteers, we've got a lot of heart. We opened up an office in that area for the first time since 1996. We're working harder than anybody has in that area before. We've got yard signs up. We're making phone calls every day, hundreds of phone calls every day, both in the morning, in the middle of the day, and in the evening. We're out there 7 days a week, and we're just making a difference. We've sent out several robocalls. We've sent out campaign literature, and I'm going to meetings all over the places. We're going to churches on Sunday morning. We're just really reaching out to the voters and showing them that we do have a fighting chance. Now, as far as the, you know, it's a mostly Republican district, and I've reaped some of the effects of that. You know, there's been several people I've talked to who they find out I'm a Democrat, and they don't always have the nicest words for me. But, you know, this isn't really a Republican and Democrat kind of election this year. Whether they're Republican or Democrat, people care about their kids, and they want their kids to have a bright future. And the fact is, whether you're Republican or Democrat, you've got to admit the fact that Dan Uberty voted to cut education by $5.4 billion. That means larger class sizes. That means that your kids aren't going to get a fair education. And I'm going to fight to make that happen. So I don't think party matters in that situation.
So let's sum it up then. Why should people vote for you this November 6th to represent District 127?
Vote for me because I'm not a politician. This thing is totally new for me. I'm a history and government teacher. And, you know, I look at history and I see what works and I see what doesn't work. I see what will push us to a brighter future. And I think that's what we need to do. Let's fund education. Let's stop teaching to the test. You know, let's fight for a clean environment. When I was young, my dad took me camping and fishing and hiking and all that kind of stuff. Let's make sure we have a clean environment to pass on to our kids. Let's make sure we fight for equal rights for every person, no matter what makes them different. Let's fight for a living wage for everybody who gets up and goes to work every day. Let's just fight to make this world a better place, and that's what I'm all about.
All right, Cody Pope, thank you very much for talking to me today.
All right.